Welcome to this September-October edition of FAA Safety Briefing Live. We're happy to have you with us this evening. I'm Paul Prydecker and joined by Susan Parson. Hello, Susan.
Hi, Paul. Nice to be back.
Back in Wisconsin. We're happy to be able to do this again. I know since our last episode a couple of months ago, I've certainly been in the system a little bit more, both flying for the Part 135 operation and also commercially. And it's been interesting to see the changes, the evolution, the management, the strategies employed by everybody involved in our current situation. We're glad to be able to continue to produce this for our viewers and to continue the training.
Absolutely.
So tonight's edition is going to be about data. But before we get into that, as always, you're able to earn wings and AMT credit. And Susan, how do they go about doing that?
Well, on the page here, it shows where you can click to get wings or AMT credit. Go to the site and take a short, easy quiz. You can get a link to the print copy. All the past programs and podcasts are available, and there's also a quick access link. So it's all there, one page, easy to find.
And it's a good way to stay current. It's a good way to learn things. And if you're able to continue your flying, that's great. If you're not able for whatever reasons, this is a good way to keep our head in the game.
Well, and that's what I'm counting on, because it's been a while since I've been able to fly GA, but I haven't in the system. Yeah, and this is another way that you can click on the different covers to get to the courses that are available for wings credit.
And it's interesting. I never really have been keeping track of how many of these we've done, but I was surprised, to know that, we've done 15 of the FAA Safety Briefing Lives. And of course, the magazine has a lot more history than that you've been involved with.
It does. I haven't done the count of how many issues I've been involved in, but I think at last count, I've written under my own name over 200 articles, which that was a little, okay.
So it sounds like you're into wordsmithing and word wrangling.
That's what I do.
That's what you do. Yeah, of course. So about the magazine, this is the part where we summarize the intent and the mission statement of FAA Safety Briefing.
Yeah, the three goals are here: raising awareness, safety and regulatory issues from the FAA standpoint, because we can do that authoritatively. And then the thing that we always say, and it's true, it's near and dear to both of our hearts, is encourage continued training. And when we have the departments here, there's a little phrase by each of them. And this is important to us. When we put the magazine together, when we redesigned it, back in 2008, I guess, when I took over, we wanted to make sure that all of the regular departments had a particular mission statement. And we designed the magazine to have a focus area each month because, as one of my magazine colleagues puts it, it's shelf stability, which is a term I like. But we intend for them to be not just current and up to date, but hopefully a reference that you can keep going back to for some time.
And no matter what the theme is, there's always something in there that I learn and I find new information, or I find information that I have forgotten that I should know. So it's a good reference and review. So join us for the next hour or so, and we'll work our way through this edition. On data-driven decision-making is the focus. And I know that you pick these themes some months in advance.
We do.
And how did you come to this one?
Well, everybody's talking about data these days. And one of my favorite Star Trek characters is Data. Data the android. Mm-hmm. But we talk about data-driven decision-making, and it's become almost an abstract term. And so we decided, because it is important not just to the FAA, but to everybody who flies and for safety reasons, we wanted to take a good close look at what that meant. We had a lot of fun with the cover. We originally had a version that was had more ones and zeros than that, but it makes the point.
So features, I see we've got Show Me the Data, Driven by Data, The Missing Link, which will be interesting. Big Data, Little Team, is about some runway mm-hmm. safety. And rise to the top. So shall we get started?
Yeah, let's get started.
So the first one is the jump seat article by Rick Domingo, the flight standards manager. And there's some interesting things in here. The first thing I noticed was the quote by Steve Dixon, the FAA administrator, really focusing on all of the efforts that the FAA is making to get data, analyze data, and use data is really for one purpose, and that's to drive safety.
Yeah, and that's been a focus area of his since he took over in the FAA, and it certainly is still the case. It's something that I know that they think about and talk about a lot at the senior levels and really throughout the FAA. One of the points we talk about and that Rick talks about in his piece here is the difference between data and information. And we've mentioned that in previous issues of the magazine, but this gets into it a little bit more carefully. Data is the raw material, and that it has to be processed, organized, and presented in some kind of context to be information. And that's when it becomes interesting. And the analogy here is with Latin long. You know, you've got these coordinates, sure, and they're a bunch of numbers, and they don't mean anything unless they are put in the context of a chart or a map or something else. The other thing is, he's got these three cautions in there, which I think really set the stage for some of the discussion that we're going to have here. The first one is garbage in, garbage out. You make a mistake, and one little mistake can have really big implications. And Latin long, again, is a good example. You get a number wrong, you transpose something, and you end up not being where you wanted to be. And the second caution was that the more you have, the less you have, the less accurate it is. So again, using the Latin long, if you have one set of coordinates, it tells you one point. But if you want to go someplace, that's not very helpful. You need more. So this is a way to set up the idea that more and more and more data is needed, and then the context to put it into information, and then we can all use it to be safer.
Well, I had a couple of observations as I was reading through this, and one was in my former career, we had access to a lot of data coming from a variety of sources, much of it through the volunteer safety programs. But this is spot on in that you have to understand what to do with the data and turn it into information you can use. And I would sometimes use the expression that we're rich in data, but we're a little poor on information.
Exactly.
Because you have to do something with it. But it's actually no different than what a pilot is doing. A pilot has exposed to data all the time, and whether it's coming from his analog instruments or his glass panel, there are data points that we have to turn in information about, especially about flight path management. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that we've always had data, we've always had access to data, but in a digital world, we have more of it. And I think it's driving us to say, now that we have this data, let's turn it into something useful. I was actually just having a conversation with a colleague of mine yesterday who represents the major airlines and one of their associations. And we were just talking about passenger employments. And he said, oh, I have that information right here. He said, you know, based on the current situation, I can tell you how many people, you know, went through airports today. I can tell you how many, you know, went through last year. Yeah. I can filter it by which airport. And using that information, they can, you know, give that information to the airlines to help them maybe drive some of their decisions as well. And whether you're in a glass cockpit airplane or, you know, the old style analog steam gauges, it's all data. It's a matter of how we use it, process it, and right, turn it into something. Your lat long example is interesting because not exactly lat long, but it reminds me of the garbage in, garbage out. I was on a flight for the airlines some years ago and was programming the flight management system. And in the National Airspace System, of course, we have a lot of five-letter intersections. And this one particular intersection is called BB. But as it turns out, there's two spellings and two intersections that are pronounced BB. One is B-E-E-B-E and one is B-E-B-B-E. Of course, I put in the wrong one.
And
as I was reviewing the flight plan and got to the bottom, I realized that we were going to land with no fuel. And I thought, something's wrong. And of course, I went back and thought, well, obviously there's a pilot error here. But those are the things that you catch at that moment, and that's how you can fix those problems, by just recognizing you can make mistakes.
Well, I did that once with a three-letter airport code. I put in Augusta, Maine when I meant Augusta, Georgia, and I noticed it when got to a certain point. I was looking at the GPS, and it seemed to want to turn me back north and for a long distance, and I thought, that can't work. So anyway, yeah, it's important to make sure that you get it right.
And we'll explore in this issue some of the ways that the FAA is looking at data and using data to help us all out. The next article is actually our condition inspection, which is a medical related issue, and I found this interesting as well, because here the aviation medical branch is using data to help streamline the certification process, especially in this case for people who have had some cardiac issues.
Well, and not just cardiac issues, there are lots of others too. The FAA started using several years ago this thing called CASI. We've got an acronym for everything, hey, right? And that's aviation, that's what we do. So conditions that AME can issue, and they started doing that based on using data that they noticed that a number of conditions that had been subject to special issuance were benign, common, and routinely approved. So they started looking at conditions under which the AME could issue, and it turns out it was a huge success. So they've expanded that program, and they're continuing to expand it. And a lot of it is based on the ability to take data and put it in the context of, do we have aviation accidents and incidents involving this condition? And as they point out here, sometimes they find that most of the time, thankfully, they find that the data will help move toward more issuance. But there was one incident that was related here where something had been allowed, and then the data showed, whoops, maybe that is not such a good idea after all. So, but the point is being open to change in whatever direction the data and the information are pointing you to. And I think that's good for all of us.
Well, and in the article it stresses, and I've heard this before in various forums, that the medical certification group is really trying to look for a path to yes.
They really stress that.
And the third bullet point that you have is they've been able to halve the denial rate over the past 10 years for certain cardiac mm-hmm. conditions. So that's significant. It means that using data appropriately, they've been able to make some successes, which keep more of us in the air.
And I think that's certainly the common goal, is to keep as many people flying as safely as possible.
It's a great article. So the next one is from your colleague, Jennifer. Show me the data.
Yeah, this... There are a lot of acronyms in here, and some of them are admittedly unwieldy, although I kind of like GARD as a mobile app. So this is talking about databases, the fact that pilots have an opportunity to share data with this, I'm not even sure how you pronounce the acronym, but the National GA Flight Information Database. And there is an app that will help upload that data, anonymous data, de-identified, all of those good things. And the whole idea is it gets uploaded into a database we call ASIAS, Aviation Safety Information Analysis and Sharing, which has been used with airline data and all sorts of other things throughout the year. And we're going to talk later on about the surface safety metric, but that's another set of data that comes into it. But the whole idea is that we have and are looking for ways to get more data, to put that all together, look at trends, and look at ways that we can all be safer. I would point out this last bullet point too, there's a new dynamic regulatory system that's coming along to replace some of the regulatory libraries that we use now. So have everything all in one place and have it a lot more efficient.
Well, and I think I read somewhere in another article that the entire FAASafety.gov site is up for renewal.
It is.
Yes.
It's a wonderful thing.
So some of my experiences with data at the airlines, we participated in several what are called voluntary safety programs. One of them was FOQA, F-O-Q-A, which is Flight Operational Quality Assurance. And it basically is monitoring information from the airplane. And it's not just a few parameters. I I think the number of parameters that we monitored on every flight was somewhere between 200 and 300 different parameters. And the more advanced airplanes are monitoring far more parameters than that. And it wasn't necessarily there to point a finger at any particular pilot, although if there was maybe an unstabilized approach into some airport, perhaps the gatekeeper who was part of the FOQA team would go to that pilot and just try to learn from it. The company was shielded from that information because it truly was de-identified, except to possibly the pilot association representative, who we call the gatekeeper. But if you looked at aggregate data coming from FOQA, we could make some other determinations, not just about a single event, but we used it to look at airports that seem to be more susceptible to occurrences of unstabilized approaches. So we thought, well, is this a pilot problem or is this a systemic problem? And in one particular case, we actually took the information and went to the air traffic control authority for that airport and had some discussions and actually found out that their procedures to some extent were contributing to our rate of unstabilized approaches because of how they would keep us at certain altitudes and how they would vector us. It turned into the approach, you know, kind of the classic slam dunk sort of a thing.
Oh, yeah.
So working with the air traffic control individuals and information, we were able to then mitigate that a great deal just by saying, well, here's our operational requirements and here's what's happening. So that was one example. And of course, the other program, which was a tremendous asset to aviation safety, was ASAP, Aviation Safety Action Program. And ASAP is the airline equivalent of the
ASRS
of the NASA form.
NASA forms, yeah.
In exchange for voluntary disclosure of information that a pilot or a crew would submit, there would be protection for certificate as long as it wasn't willful negligence sort of behavior, but there would be protection for your certificate in exchange for all of the safety information that we could ultimately learn from. And then we were also participants in ASIAS, which really is a data source of many operators going into many airports. And again, not looking at an individual aircraft, but again, aggregate trends about what's happening.
Well, and I think one of the things that we learned from the airline world, because GA is much more diverse, much bigger in some ways, but the idea is that in your highly structured world, where I'd say airline pilots are pretty suspicious a lot, but I think that it was demonstrated conclusively that this really is de-identified anonymous
Absolutely.
Data. And that it's non-jeopardy. The whole idea is that information is used for the greater good and for improvement, which is very consistent with the FAA's compliance program. And the idea is that having learned those lessons and developed new technologies, now we can seek and get greater data because airplanes are like cars. They have a lot more parameters now than they used to.
Indeed. One of the interesting points about the participation in a company ASAP program was essentially there are three groups representing their various organizations. There's company representatives, which are coming from the management side of the company. There's the pilot association representatives that are there. And then there's the FAA. So the FAA would designate representatives, and the exchange of information was a free exchange of information.
Absolutely.
And again, trying to determine, is this a systemic problem? Is it a one of? And let's come to a consensus about how to deal with it. So
it's really exciting that we can start moving that kind of approach without some of the more formal structures that you're talking about into GA.
But absolutely. And the other part of this, the benefit, is I know that the FAST team is using some of the information to design some of their seminars, their programs, and their courses.
And we'll get into that.
Let's keep going. Driven by data.
And that was the great segue.
Yes.
Yeah, driven by data. There's a new tool, and there's the title of it is in there, the FPM data analysis tool, which is more colloquially known as FATDAT. And the first time I heard it, it was like, FATDAT, what's that? What is that? Yeah, and it's all about taking all of this information, the kind of data that you see here. It's kind of like the way a SIAS takes in a lot of information and pulls it all together. But it used to be that FA safety program managers had to do what a lot of them called hand hacking data, and for their regions, and they would get information. They would spend a lot of time, and you know, not everybody has the same data mining, data manipulation skill. And this is a tool that will allow them to look at things and develop mitigation strategies that are specific to their regions. And I think that's very exciting. So this sounds like a little bit of an inside baseball. You know, what do I care? Because that's what the safety program managers use. But actually, this is where information can be used, again, to focus FAST team attention and resources and mitigations on things that are specific to a particular area. And it is contributing to the ongoing overhaul of safety.gov, new platform, which will have a mobile app. Yay, I'm so excited. And improving user friendliness. And eventually, they're talking about having artificial intelligence links that will allow, you know, based on user profile and settings, that you could get information saying, hey, your airplane has a known problem. You should be aware of this. So there's just a lot of potential for good stuff and safety stuff that can come out of this. So Fat Dad is a, even if it's an interesting name, it's a pretty cool tool.
Well, it is. And with all of the data that's available to us, I mean, one of the keys, of course, is to manage it.
Yep.
And this is an example of how it's being managed. And later on in the program, we'll highlight the two individuals who
created it. Yeah, it's the same thing we've been talking about. It's taking data and contextualizing, see, I could say that word, that information into, or that data into information that can be used for safety mitigations and preventing problems.
Well, I was interested in one of the case studies that your colleague Tom Hoffman addressed was at UND. Mm-hmm. They were looking at pilot deviations, mm-hmm, that were coming from the flight students at UND, and it was between instructors and the students, and they really had determined that CRM was a course that was taught, but was really sort of being taught at the end of the curriculum.
Right.
And they decided we should maybe alter this and teach this part of it up front. And they were able to drive a lot of the pilot deviations down just by how they address CRM in the classroom.
Yeah, I think there are a number of examples like that have been discovered, but that is certainly one that's specifically mentioned in this article. So it's great stuff.
And you can, the FatDat tool allows you to parse out and filter by region or by event or by airplane and turning into a little bit more meaningful information.
Yeah, and I think that's always been a goal because, you know, the FAST team has had to take things and you try to look at national trends, but what's going on as an aggregate nationally might or might not be relevant to a specific area. So this does definitely allow for more specificity.
Very good. So what's missing?
Well, the missing link, yeah, this has been GA, and this gets a little bit more, it's a little bit of a deeper dive, but coming from the human evolution analogy point, which I thought was kind of fun, that there was not a missing link, but several, and this gets to the analogy is that in the FAA community, or in the data community, that there were some missing links and that over time we've been trying to fill those out. So this gets back to that national GA flight information database. And I didn't realize this until we were looking into the article, but we have over 103 business and corporate users, 13 universities, and over 1 million hours of data now that have gone into filling this particular missing link. But if you look at the points on the right side, this is where there's a whole section, a subhead, what's in it for me, because mm-hmm, that's what we all care about, right?
Sure.
And it allows pilots to track activity and get analysis of flights, customize parameters. And then I think this is pretty cool that under the 2.0 version, you can see your flights on a street map or a sectional. You can replay them. And this is another plug for the app, the Guard app, and the things that you can do with it. And then again, at the very bottom, this is important because we want to make sure everybody understands it's de-identified before it's viewable by anybody else, mm-hmm. and that UND and MITRE serve the same function for this data as NASA does for the Aviation Safety Reporting System. So confidentiality of data that is provided is very assured.
Well, and the article also talks about how the reason that GA and some business aviation have been missing in this process is they started with the airlines because mm-hmm. that was easy.
Yeah.
The airlines have a known fleet going to known cities, known city pairs, and the airline flying is reasonably predictable. Mm-hmm. So capturing that data is, on the grand scheme of things, relatively easy. The general aviation pilot, of course, can have a great deal more freedom of scheduling and flights and aircraft, and to some extent the same for business. But I'm encouraged to see that the participation at both the business level and on the general aviation private pilot side is on the increase, because certainly there are things to learn from that information. And as this app takes on more traction and more people use it, it'll be better for everybody. And in the magazine itself, on the next page of this is a QR code mm-hmm. on how you can actually download the app. I think right now it's for iOS only, but it's coming for Android.
I think that's, yeah, I can't remember what the time frame mm-hmm. is. Another thing, you know, one of the reasons that you start with the airlines are regulated and they could be a regulatory link there. Another thing is that the equipment used to be pretty expensive, and nowadays it's not. I mean, there are all kinds of ways to easily and inexpensively collect and upload the data, and that makes a difference too. And then I do want to do this shout out. I remember when this project was going on in Phoenix, near and dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. And so there was a pilot project out there to show how this could be used, and that's kind of what got the ball rolling, and it's expanded since then. So we might not have a missing link for a whole lot longer.
Well, it sounds like it's being resolved, you know, day by day. And again, the more pilots that take advantage of the app, the article goes on to explain that you can just use the app as a standalone. And it will take, you know, some rudimentary data to point out your flight track and qualities of your flight. Or it can also couple to the outputs from some of your avionics. Of course, the more sophisticated the avionics you have, the more information you're able to retrieve. Mm-hmm. But even at its very lowest level, it's a no cost.
So helpful.
Yeah, it's a no cost way to get into the system.
Yeah, exactly. So on guard.
Indeed. Big data, little team. I wasn't sure what that was about at first, but it's really about runway safety analysis.
The runway might have given you a clue.
It might have.
Yeah, this was fun. We had a new author who very passionate, very enthusiastic about this runway safety group. We know we've talked about runway safety and all of these things that need to be done, and they came up with the surface safety metric, which I'm sure that mathematically it's more complicated than I would understand, but it looks at data sources, pulls a lot of things together, and what it seems to be able to do is to objectively quantify risk and then be able to show what's trending and how to make things better. Now they have, there's lots of positive information here, but one of the things that I thought was encouraging is that they're starting to see a trend toward less runway safety issues, but nobody takes any of that for granted, and that's what mm-hmm. the three cautions are at the end.
Well, it's, the first caution is taken from a quote, actually, from Wilbur Wright. It says, to make sure that we're not overconfident just because we're on the ground.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, fly the machine until it's safely tied down, something like that. And then, you know, use all these things like taxiing more slowly, navigating by reference to the diagram, communicating if you need assistance. And one of the ones that I really stress is that when you are moving around on the surface of an airport, no matter what airport it is, and no matter how well you think you know that airport, don't be multitasking. This is not the time to program the GPS or to do your checklist or anything else. Look out, look around, because you can easily knock into something.
And the fact that there is so much data out there, I mean, take the simplest form, the taxi diagrams now give you a visual reference to designated hotspots. Mm-hmm. It would be a shame not to be aware of those and to use that information.
And when you have ownership, that you have the representation, sure, of your little dot, so you know where you are. And then the other thing, a trick that somebody showed me years ago when some of the common apps first came out, that, gosh, you can take, you can put up the runway diagram, and when you get a taxi clearance, take one of the markers, and instead of, sure, writing it down, you just draw your taxi clearance as you go, and then you follow along. So it was very, I've used that ever since.
Well, there's various strategies, and it's interesting. I frequently see on the FAA website, or I get emails from the FAA safety group about runway safety simulators.
Oh yeah,
information about different airports. Obviously, it's a focus item, and it has been for a long time, and it still should be. As you know, I operated in and out of Chicago O'Hare for quite some time, and people had this idea that O'Hare was sort of a complicated airport.
It is.
And yes and no. The key to being successful at O'Hare, once you were either departing or arriving, was to just do what they say and do it right. If they said fly at 170, that's what they meant, to fly at 170. So to that extent, if you just did what you were told, it was just another airport. Until you got on the ground. And then it was a whole other world. And so many taxi mistakes, runway incursions are preventable by using the tools that you have to, as you say, draw it out, write it out, talk to your crew, brief it. And don't make assumptions about what your taxi route's going to be just because you've done that three times before. I've learned to, you know, always expect the unexpected, because they have their own program sometimes, and you have to fit into it.
Things change, and you get, yeah. Another point that I wanted to stress here, and this is more than about runways. It's been an interesting 6-month period in which traffic went from really busy to almost nothing to coming back again. And I think that one of the things that I know the FAA is looking at is how to, you know, and airlines and really flight schools, everybody is looking at, okay, so we haven't been able to fly as much, so we need to make sure that we pay attention and accept the fact that there might be some rustiness there, not just with stick and rudder skills. But even if traffic is still down relative to where it was, whether it's in the air or on the ground, don't make assumptions that there aren't so many people around here. I don't have to be as careful, because actually in some ways we all have to be more careful, because probably everybody's a little bit rustier than they have been in the past.
And my experience has been, whether there's a lot of traffic or not so much, controllers still talk fast.
Yeah.
So you need to keep up.
Yeah, keep up.
Yeah. I do want to mention that this article highlights an individual in the ATC system named Cody McClellan. He's a controller at Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And when he first started being a controller at Baton Rouge, he noticed that Baton Rouge had a fairly high incidence of taxiway and runway mistakes for his region. And he took it upon himself to work with other controllers and to actually engage with the pilot groups who were operating in and out of that airport. And through mentoring, coaching, and education, the numbers that were quoted was they drove the incursions from 28 incursions per 100,000 operations down to 3.
Which is amazing.
So, again, it shows that taking data, educating people about, you know, both sides of the operation, they were able to make some great strides.
I'm really understanding why people do things, because that we sometimes we don't always understand that for ourselves. But anyway, lots of good stuff in there.
And this is a good one about rising to the top, about balloons, and some really interesting concepts here.
Well, we've had, we try to serve the entire range of the GA community, and periodically this particular individual, Mr. McGee, writes for us on balloons, very passionate about that. And this time it was a lot of fun. He talks about how fledgling balloonists start out, and he calls it Mount Ignorance the first 100 hours, and then they get to the Valley of Despair because you make a mistake and think, and that's when you start to realize, oops,
yeah, I don't know as much.
I don't know what I think I know. And then the slope of enlightenment, and last he talks about the plateau of sustainability. And I actually kind of visualize that plateau as more like a point where you're balancing on it, and you could still, and he does say, you know, you could go back or you could go forward. But at every stage, he talks about hazardous attitudes and the importance of personal minimums, which I've always characterized as that safety buffer, kind of like the fuel reserve.
Well, and he addresses that we use the PAVE and the I'm Safe checklist, but then reinforce that with your own personal minimums, because we all have different abilities, sometimes at different times of the day.
Oh, well, yeah. And I know that, you know, my personal minimums would be different because I haven't been able to fly the way that I did for a while. And I think that's true for a lot of people now. But he talks about using certification standards. Could you still meet those? Using the WINGS program checklist, the passenger briefing. There are lots of ways to do that, but for heaven's sake, you know, do that. But then at the very last, this is whether you're lighter than air or heavier than air, know and use these resources. And as I was reading the article when we were doing the editing, I thought, well, he's being specific to balloons, but there's not a whole lot in this article that doesn't apply.
It applies to all of us.
Whatever category and class you're flying, it really.
I mean, certainly the use of PAVE and I'm Safe, developing personal minimums, no matter what your certification level is. And he also makes a point about there's a difference, of course, as we all know, between currency and proficiency.
Oh, yes.
A lot of pilots might strive for currency, but that doesn't necessarily mean they've achieved proficiency. And there are so many tools to help us with that. Certainly going with an instructor is one of them, but also participating in the WINGS programs and the various FAA seminars and webinars to help keep us in the game. He brought up some interesting data. To balloon pilots, I'm sure this is well known, but power lines are the number one cause of accidents. 79% of balloon incidents are related to the landing phase, and 48% of pilots who had 15 hours or less in the past 90 days have a higher incident rate. And that all goes to the idea that you might be current, but your skill set might be a little bit reduced.
Yeah, I always talked about, and this especially with instrument flying, legal, current, and proficient.
Two different things. Three different things.
Yeah. Being legal doesn't mean you're current, and being current doesn't mean you're proficient. By the way, have you ever been up in a balloon?
Not as the pilot, but as a passenger.
Yeah, I have too.
It's a little hard for me. It's a little bit hard for me because I'm afraid of heights.
That's always such a weird thing.
Yeah, or I'm afraid of falling. Okay. One of the two. But I found myself
moving away from the edge
a little bit, but it was a wonderful experience.
Did you enjoy the champagne at the end?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, that helped. It probably would have helped if I would have started with that. But
we weren't flying.
But it was good. And I've often wondered as I looked at his characteristics of Mount Ignorance, Valley of Despair, the slope of enlightenment, and plateau of sustainability. I sometimes wonder where I am sometimes, because we probably can float between those sometimes.
Oh, absolutely.
But the plateau of sustainability, I think, is also a cautionary place to be, because complacency can enter into this if we're not careful to use our checklist and to follow our procedures.
Well, complacency is the worst thing for anything. I always talk about whether you're the pilot in command or the passenger in comfort.
Exactly. So it was a good article. It's fun.
It's a lot of
fun. So this is your
This
article
is a data-rich article.
Yeah.
This is about, you know, I started off by saying, you know, sometimes the FAA website is a pretty big place, and I'm always stumbling over stuff that I didn't know was there. And so when I was doing research for this issue, I actually stumbled across this Data Innovation Center, and there are links in there. It turns out it's the access portal for FAA aeronautical data and products, which the FAA shares for app developers and others. So not only can you subscribe for updates to chart and products that pilots will use, but if you're into app development, there's a way to connect and get data here. And it talks about various forums that you can join: aeronautical charting, IdeaScale, Stack Exchange, which is a Q&A for developers. A couple things the FAA moderates, others not. And then there was some really sort of exciting stuff this fall. The portal is going to be modernized, and the whole idea is to just keep making it better so that, you know, this is, I think we're all very cognizant of the fact that the taxpayers are supporting things and should be able to participate and get some benefit from that. So,
well, I mean, certainly there's been so many changes. I mean, the design of FAA Safety Briefing itself has changed. We've made a few changes to FAA Safety Briefing Live. And when I read about website development and how things are being changed, you brought up, yeah, make some mobile platforms, make it a little bit more user-friendly. Since I'm just now beginning to look into website development myself, I can't even imagine what managing all of this is like, because it's got to be a big effort. But it's great to see that there's this continuous improvement movement.
Fortunately, there are people who understand how to do that, even if I'm not one of them.
Well, we're all users of it, and it's and I know that you get a lot of user input to drive some of this.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Database decision making.
Drones.
It's all about drones, and we've talked about this on every edition of FAA Safety Briefing Live about the importance of UAS and drones, and how they are part again of the data system as well.
Well, they are, and what this article gets into is uses more acronyms. We have the Integration Pilot Program, which some people may be familiar with, and what's coming soon is, or is coming, Partnership for Safety Program, and both of these. So let me just step back. The FAA's goal with UAS or drones has been to integrate these aircraft into the system. That they need to be, so everybody needs to be playing in the same airspace and working together. And because a lot of this is new, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And what the FAA has been doing is using programs like the IPP and the PSP and exemptions and other tools that we have to allow operations with some safety guardrails around it so that we can learn and the industry can learn, and we can all share data and information and then use that to contribute to the regulation, the eventual standards for more complex operations, such as the ones that are listed here. Swarms, expanded operations, ops over people, package delivery, all the stuff that I'm really looking forward to.
I'm sure.
I mean, I want my package, this two-day stuff is way too long.
I know. You want to downloaded directly to your doorstep.
Well, when I was a kid, you know, I'm dating myself, but you would order in a mail order catalog and you'd send away for something, and 6 weeks later it might come, and you'd never know when it was going to show up. And now I'm kind of looking at it like, I ordered that this morning. Where is it?
Well, I'm dating myself as well, but I, as a young person interested in various aspects of aviation, I used to build model rockets.
Oh, right.
From the Estes model rocket company in Penrose, Colorado. Yeah. And I couldn't wait to send my order off with
green stamps.
I don't think it was green. I think I put a real check in there, but it probably came from my mom and was just waiting, you know, how long will this take? Yeah. Even though the envelope said rush. You know, it never really seemed to happen. It was never as quick as I wanted it to be.
But I think, you know, these programs are allowing us to gather and use data. And I think a lot of it has been, you know, this is the FAA trying to work with the community and be innovative and allow for innovation. But it's still the agency's responsibility to protect people and property, both in the air and on the ground. And The only way that you can do that is to learn as much as you can, use data, pull it into information, and use it to drive things forward.
So well, this is an excellent example of how the FAA is reaching out to user groups. In the IPP, it talks about the 10 partners. I'm not going to read them all, but as an example, City of San Diego, yeah. Virginia Tech, North Dakota Department of Transportation, University of Alaska, of course, Lee County Mosquito Control District.
Yeah, all sorts of different.
So many different private and public sector organizations are partnering with the FAA to make this work.
And that's been the succession of programs. So the integration pilot program is ending in October, and then this new partnership for safety program is starting in October for 3 years. So
it's great.
Lots more data to come.
Perfect. And from drones, we have we go to nuts, bolts, and electrons, which is our information for maintenance people. And as we talked about earlier in the program, you can get wings and AMT credit. See Something, Say Something is really about the service difficulty reports.
And there's another called MDR malfunctioning defect reports, which is, it describes here as kind of like the buyer beware, give your reviews. And yeah, this kind of data is awfully important. And we have a system that, as the article notes, we have heard and we know that there are some things in the format and the user interface that are not what they should be. But yay, the just like with safety.gov, the modernization is underway. They've already cut the number of outstanding reports, and the system is moving towards something that's going to be more, as they say, robust and user-friendly. But I really thought it was cool. One of the points that they make in here is that the technology is going to allow for uploading photos, images, and let you get email notifications of what's going on with the service difficulty report or MDR. But I think being able to upload photos and images is going to make a big difference, because you know, there you can show exactly what you're talking about, something that you've seen.
And it's certainly it's about parts.
Yes.
That's been in the press and is a hot topic. It's certainly about parts, but also processes and procedures. And the spirit of this is, even at Part 91, although there's no specific requirement, you should participate. And again, it's anonymous.
And that's what I was going to say. That it is, there is an opportunity to provide contact information, and that's encouraged if you feel like you want to do it. Simply because the more, if somebody has a question, the more information that they can get, the better. But it is not required to provide a name or any contact information in order to submit a report. The most important thing is, with this as so many other things, if you see something, say something. Safety hazards are everybody's business, so we need to know and do something about it.
It's a program that's under evolution, of course, but it's, as you just alluded to, it's taking user input about how we can make the system better.
Yeah, exactly.
And the FAA Lessons Learned Library, this is from your colleague, Tom Hoffman, under Angle of Attack. And
yeah, I remember writing about this a long time ago. I thought I called it Lessons Learned or something. I know that I wrote about this. And it turns out that, you know, you need to go back and look at things periodically, because this one has been overhauled. There are 82 modules on the site now, adding 5 or 6 new ones a year, but there's been a redesign, and they've added both small airplane and helicopter communities. The site is now called something different, Lessons Learned from Civil Aviation Accidents. And as it points out on that right-hand side, there are 3 libraries, small airplane, transport, and rotorcraft. And there are different perspectives for each one. And as Tom points out, you can really geek out on
He admits to being a geek.
Yeah, no, he does.
to looking at some of the video programs that are that are on television about accidents, how they've been recreated. And this is the FAA's own version of that, which, again, that's also expanding.
And it's come a long way from where it was when I last wrote about it. So it was a reminder when we got into this that, yeah, I need to go back and look at some of the things that we knew before, because they're constantly changing and happily improving. And the people who work on this for the FAA, they're quite passionate about what they do and what they're contributing. And I think this probably could have been a much larger, longer article if we'd had the space for it.
Well, the one key piece of data and the second bullet point is that it's averaging over 1 million hits per month.
Yeah, that's
so
a lot.
That's a, you know, certainly a testament to both the usability of the site, and also people want to learn.
Well, we all do.
We all do. And I mean, you know, I've put together a presentation that I used to give some of my classes I used to teach. The spirit of it was, I think the title of it was Never Ever Waste a Mistake.
I've stolen that from you.
Yes. Never waste a mistake.
All right.
And the spirit of it is that the mistakes that we make, or the mistakes that others might make, should really be viewed as gifts of learning. And I certainly have noticed that sometimes if you have a group pilots sitting around talking about some event that just happened, somebody just landed at the wrong airport. Well, it's a pretty quick thing to, you know, to vilify those pilots and say, oh, I would never do that. Mm-hmm. And that's completely the wrong attitude, because
they're in for the grace of God.
Absolutely. The real message to be, what can I learn from this so that I don't do it myself? It's what we've talked about before. It's another data point. Lessons have to be shared in order to be learned. There are so many mechanisms of sharing lessons. This is an outstanding place to look at events in three different sectors and just sit back and say, what can I learn from this?
Yeah, well, and a friend of mine says, in context of some accidents, she says, you know, I was reading those. She said, I could actually see myself in every one of those. And I thought, well, she's humble enough to recognize that, yes, she could go there. But this is something I know pilots, some do have a tendency to sit around, because we've all been in these situations where you go, well, I wouldn't do that. And then you later may find yourself in a situation where suddenly you understand why and how things could happen. But I do find that it's interesting in the aviation community. Most pilots I know are accident geeks, and not in a macabre sense of the
term. No, but they're hungry for information.
But it's all about what happened and how do I make sure that I don't do that.
Absolutely.
Which is the right attitude.
Absolutely. Every pilot has made mistakes, and the spirit of that is to debrief yourself. What happened? What can I do to prevent it? And to have an opportunity to learn from others is a great opportunity. So my congratulations to the group for putting that together. This is
helicopters
and history lessons. It's the vertical speaking column, and it's all about the U.S. helicopter safety team and some of their efforts.
Yeah, and this is continuing to try to bring down the causes of accidents, looking at data, using data to drive safety enhancements. And there's a program, they call this RP document, the recommended practice document, and it came from reviewing over 100 accidents. And this is the scenario-based simulator training is something that's really being stressed here, and the importance of what people can learn from simulating something. And, you know, it can be, as you know, very realistic.
Well, whenever we go through pilot training, especially in a simulator, there's a certain group of things that we just have to accomplish in terms of maneuvers and procedures. But the real test comes when you can put it together in what we call an LOE, or a line-oriented evaluation, or a LOFT, line-oriented flight training session. All of this is about simulator-based training.
Exactly.
And it applies to helicopter world as well as fixed wing and you're there to learn from it and to see how would you react
exactly
in those situations. Um,
Oh, this was mine.
This is your Robert Redford thing.
Well, it starts out with a Robert Redford quote that he likes ambiguity. And I was thinking about that. I came across it because, you know, pilots, a lot of technical people don't like ambiguity. We love, I will say we, because I'm sort of in between those worlds. But I always tell my friends in engineering, especially, you know, those zeros and ones, they seem really great, binary code. But remember that people and policies and realities live in that infinite number of fractions. And as I was thinking about that, I thought, well, there's an awful lot of ambiguity in everything. We talk about the go, no-go decision, but we know it's not. It's way more complicated than that. That there's this continuous process of putting data into context to get information and making sense of that. And then, as I point out, there another level of ambiguity that I think sometimes people don't pay enough attention to is gut feelings, because if something doesn't look or feel right, there's a part of your brain that's giving you a warning you at least need to pay attention to.
Well, you mentioned an author that we both like, Malcolm Gladwell, and his book Blink, which is sort of an example of how your brain is taking in information that might give you that gut feeling.
And you need to
pay attention.
You need to at least ask a few more questions. But I kind of ended up, I love improv theater, which looks really scary. They get on there and they make it all up in front of you. But there are rules that provide scaffolding that makes it all work. And I've been fascinated by how that could be transferred to other worlds. But I thought, as I was thinking about it, I thought, well, you know, pilots, everything we do is improv. We plan and we have an idea, but the scaffolding that we have is risk management and asking those questions and paying attention to gut feelings. And then we can deal safely with the ambiguity that's just part of our regular world. So,
well, I used to write procedures, you know, for the airline, and I was the first one to admit that we strive for black and white, but we live in the gray areas a lot.
There you go.
And your go, no go, once the decision is made to go, then that becomes start, continue, and evaluating the data. So.
Well, as we get toward the end here,
FAA Faces.
Faces, and you ought to read about these guys.
Charlie Hamilton and Jay Flowers.
They are the brains behind the FATDAT tool, and they both have tons of experience, and they are both in just immensely passionate about what they do and why they do it. And I know them, or I've certainly dealt with Jay in various things, and I'm always impressed when I learn all the stuff that my colleagues can do. So please do take a look.
These two gentlemen are not underachievers.
They're
exceptional, and they've made a great contribution.
And I think it's also cool that, you know, people who work for the FAA are very passionate about aviation. That's how we got there, and that's why we do what we do.
Yeah, so I can see why you highlighted them, and they're to be commended. In the last part here about ADIS, just sort of news roundup, the things that caught my attention was the new aviation instructor handbook is out, and there's more runway safety animations.
And various things that you could do. The instructor handbook, I want to point out on that one, that was developed with lots of recommendations and input from the aviation community through the ACS working group. So that was very much a product that benefited from, not from some dark corner of the FAA, that's not where it came from. The changes in the structure and everything that's in there came from people like you, the aviation community.
Our feedback section, this is always the time when we were requesting feedback.
We get a lot. We get a lot in different ways, emails that boxes check pretty frequently, and we respond usually through email, but also through the magazine. So always happy to hear from people in various ways to get in touch with us.
Again, it's user input and data, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Lots of places to find us.
Yeah, here we are. Download PDF, get notifications, Twitter, Facebook, print edition there if you want the paper copy. So lots of different options.
And the archived issues, which we've been highlighting as well, is a good reference source. So I know you picked these themes well in advance. I'm looking at this, and my first thought was, okay, we're going to talk about winter, or maybe we're going to be talking about flying in the Arctic, but it's something different.
It is. This is one of the things that keeps happening is controlled flight into terrain. And we're going to take a look at why that happens and how you can avoid, why we look at them when you fly and not fly into them.
Well, we'll look forward to putting that together. And as always, we wrap up with this, just the link for the Wings and AMT credit.
For go get your Wings credit. The quiz is easy. Get easy Wings credit. Download the print copy. Hopefully you'll read some of the articles and use them for reference in the future.
And again, this is our link to the other copies. You can just click on the covers and go directly.
Yeah, and when I look at those covers, I think, wow, you know, lots of words. We've had a lot of fun with them, and I hope that if you haven't seen some of these issues, that you'll go back and look at them. The Vitruvian airplane, I remember that one especially. Yeah. Was fun to do.
So it's been fun again to do this. We'll look forward to the November, December issue.
And, yeah, well, maybe you'll have to come to Phoenix next time.
It'll be winter, so I'm sure I will.
Yeah.
Okay. Stay safe, everybody. Stay well. We look forward to seeing you again.
Happy flying.